If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one omnipresent self. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening our seminar topic is, What Makes Your Heart Sing? So if you're ready, be present here and now. And as you take a deep breath, intend to connect and infuse yourself and integrate all of your divinity as much as you can possibly bring into your physical envelope. So take a deep breath. And allow that energy to ride down over the top of your head, flow through your nervous system, touch to and ground through your feet, and push the energy deep into the soul star in the center of the earth. Claim every step you take for the light, so that as you walk the earth, you walk as a Leoe Shekinah, a pillar of holiness, a Leoe Kadosh, a pillar of divinity. Be aware that you do not begin and end with the top of your head and the bottom of your feet. In highest truth, you're omnipresent. Even scientifically, we are learning that we live in a holographic universe where the totality is reflected in every tiny quark of existence. And like a Mandelbrot fractal, it keeps replicating the same message. All life is one. All life is one. All life is one. United whole. That is the truth. And anything else we've made up in our divided mental state. But now we are having a call to return to the unified whole mind, whole-mindedness. And that requires our conscious participation. Otherwise, it doesn't happen. Why? Because you are a divine incarnation. And who is going to tell you what to do? That's why even on a lower level of consciousness, we resent it. When somebody says, you must do this, you should do that. You know, none of us like that. And it's because we are divine. And there's a part of us that is very aware of that. And another part that chooses not to be aware of it. And that's the only difference between a person who simply presents as enlightened and awake and a person who is basically fooling themselves by claiming ignorance and an unenlightened state, which is nonsense. But you're left free to do that nonsense for as long as you want. So, what makes your heart sing? What makes your heart sing? Can you recall a time, a place, a situation, or something that you did or are doing now in which you experienced your heart virtually singing? You know, that state where you know that you know that you are exactly where you're meant to be, doing exactly what God created you to do, be, and express. that creates that joyful heart, that singing heart. Have you ever experienced that? Yes? Well, are you still experiencing that? I mean, look, take a look. Is your heart singing right now? If not, when did your heart song fall silent? What lowered the volume or caused it to cease entirely? It's these little things that should serve as feedback for when we are walking in the steps of the divine and when we're out mood making in Egoville. These are, directional signals, like you have on your car, I forget what you call it, but you know what I'm talking about, that keep you on track. So did it ever occur to you that the one singing in your heart is God? Or in other words, it's you as the divine beloved. So your heart song is the proof that you're right on purpose in your life, in your place, and in your expression. So be aware and pay attention, for the singing heart is really divine feedback. It's God's way of giving you the high five, saying, right on, go for it. And the singing heart is your true self expressing its innate, joyous, blissful, happy nature. It's divine well-being. Divine well-being. For all is well with you. That's that singing heart. And the heart sings whenever we rise above self-interest in the ego sense. And whenever we give of ourselves in some manner of service, that is probably the simplest, easiest way to shift one's state of consciousness from gloom to gladness instantly, is to move from self-focus and self-interest and self-involvement and self-concern into selfless service. Doing some random act of kindness, or in other words, just simply working to make someone else's life happier. You know, if you're unhappy, it spreads the gloom and the unhappiness of everyone else, because we're one life and we're all connected. So we can work out some of that bad karma that we've gotten through doing that, by now doing whatever we can to make another happy, make people happy. I'm in the process of moving right now, and I'm literally giving everything I own away, literally. And I'm having so much fun looking at the different items that would really make certain people really happy, and giving it to them. And the joy I feel each time I do that, and a sense of freedom. And I've been lugging around past history, past accomplishments, past journals of past accomplishments and past history. Oh, you know the drill. You probably, many of you, done the same thing. But I attract books, spiritual books, like a magnet. I can only have to be in a place a short period of time where the books start to come and pile up around me. And I think I also attract more books because I'm always giving books and giving knowledge and information. And so what you give, you receive more of, right? Anyway, it is, I can tell you from experience, more blessed to give away your things that you think you're so attached to than it is to lug them around from storage compartment to storage compartment and house to house, or you know what I'm saying. And that's what I'm doing now. Another thing that came up for me, which may come up for some of you, I found I was very attached to my image. Hello. Who I think I am and what I think I've done and the many things I believe that I did do in this dream illusion that we call life. And the hardest thing for me was to let go of my magazine articles. You know, I have over 20 years of being a published writer, and all those magazines lugged around from storage locker to storage locker. Why? Because I was attached. I say was because I can see very clearly how stupid that is and pointless and unnecessary, and I've awakened in that illusion to the point where now I think I'm just going to be able to dump them in the dumpster and step free through grace. So if any of you are moving, and I know a lot of you are right now, it seems like everybody's getting uprooted in what has been, whether it's a relationship or a job or a move to another place, or in my case where there's been a death in the immediate household where I suddenly have to relocate. But death happens, change happens, shifting happens. It's a predictable in the third dimension. Whatever is born into the illusion must at some point die from the illusion to be born into ongoing, eternal, multidimensional, ever-creative and expansive life. So nobody really dies, but they graduate and disappear out of the illusion when it has served their purpose, whatever that soul purpose was. So as you move through your day, it's so important to observe your process. This is probably, for me, the most conscious move I've ever made. Because this time, I'm not just going into automatic pack and get out of here mode, where I lose awareness in the process of the busyness of packing. I'm sure you can relate to what I'm sharing. But I consciously watch the states that I'm moving through as I do this, where I'm attached, where I want to cling to the past, where I have hope of maybe regenerating the past, or whether I'm cruising on past glory, so to speak, that no longer serves me or fits the person that I am today. You know, do these things of the past fit the person I am today? It's like when you move to a new place, did you ever notice that you kind of want to have new things around you? New things. A friend of mine, I won't mention her name, but a friend of mine who is a very famous world traveler and takes groups of people to ancient sites and does initiations, every time she comes back from a journey, she has to give away all the stuff in her house because the vibrations don't fit anymore. After a while, even the cat went. And then even the husband had to go. So when you change inside, everything has to change with it. Now, both of my computers, well, one computer has completely died. The other one is making serious growling noises and heats up like a furnace when I have it on very short period of time. So they're no longer going to be able to serve in the person I'm moving into manifesting. So you'll notice that even the objects in your house begin to give the feedback, been there, done that, given my all, next, you know, I'm out of here. The next one is time to come forward to be in service to you in whatever way you need it. You can see so clearly how life is rigged. Oh my gosh, it's never been more clear to me that the whole thing is set up and rigged. And everybody's got the end result game plan but you. One of the darndest things is that everything shifts first inside your consciousness. You have to make the shift inside first before anything can be released outwardly. In other words, those attachments and things that I was wrestling with in my own psychological nature was blocking anything from coming in as my next step. And only when I excruciatingly divested myself and let that old self die and just ruthlessly trashed everything that had to do with it, only then did the energy seem to release, and synchronistically in one day a whole new life emerged. It was so fast it made my head swim. It's like bim bam bam. Why? Because I had let go inside. I had let go. And I said at the get-go, you know what? If it doesn't make my heart sing, if I haven't used it in 7 years, yeah, I've been here 7 years, full cycle. If it isn't really something that's part of who and what I am right now, I'm going to release it. Of course, that's easier said than done, right? We all know that. So the process of the releasing has been much more difficult. And I'll tell you something funny. I have a whole pile of boxes, most of them books, I would say, about 30 years worth of, well, not 30 years, but 30 boxes worth of books, all kinds of spiritual books, every one of them spiritual books. Excuse me. And papers, you know, things that I had written on, journals and, you know, my writings and stuff like that. And, oh, tapes from all my classes and seminars and, oh, my gosh, years and years and years of work. And I had forgotten I had it. Did not remember I had it. I should never have opened the Pandora's box by looking inside the box to see if there was anything I might, quote, need. Hello, I haven't seen it for 7 years. I don't remember I have it. And now all of a sudden I'm wondering if I need it. Do you see the nonsense that goes on in the lower mind? Do you see the crazy making? And the minute I looked into the boxes, oh, my God, I can't give that away. Oh, this is precious. Oh, so-and-so gave that to me. So-and-so sent that. Oh, you see the dilemma? Then it became a big freaking problem that wasn't a problem if I had just chucked the boxes, you know, out of sight, out of mind, forget it, whatever's in it, done, get rid of it. But did I do that? No. So, just saying, these are the things that I'm not alone, go through when we're wrestling with the things that we have made really important that are of the material, transitory, ever-changing world. I mean, I'm lucky. I get to sit and go through boxes. But what about the people that overnight lost livelihood, livestock, homes, and their communities in many cases, or even their countries, with massive floods or tornadoes or these fires, where, you know, in a matter of a few minutes or an hour, their lives are finished as they were living them before. And many, of course, lost loved ones as well. So this seems to be the time when, if ever there was a message that the universe was trying to deliver, it's you cannot control what's going to happen. There is something higher that is moving through all of us, pushing us into and beyond our status quo, our gerbil cages, our same old 9-to-5 humdrum, boring lives into the unknown. Which, even if the life is boring, most of us would prefer having the same old, predictable than having radical, total change of everything overnight. I mean, bear in mind that tornado, that flood took away the cell phones. Hello. Some people look like they have that stuck to their ear permanently, like it's been grafted on. They lost their cell phones. They lost their iPads, their computers. Most of us have our lives in inner space, cyberspace. They're not really material lives so much as they've become ethereal lives. But the ethereal is what gives the blueprinting for the physical manifestation. But just consider the radicalness with which the shifting is taking place. Oh, we've talked about Earth changes, my gosh. We were talking about them back in the late 70s, 80s, I can remember. But the face of it changes, and the spin around it changes, but slightly. But now we don't even have time to hardly even talk about them, as they're on us. They're on us. And we don't know when the next sinkhole will open, or the next volcano will go off, or the next tornado will come down, or the next fire will erupt. So we've got to find that place within us of the singing heart, of the peaceful heart, of the loving heart, of the giving heart, of the transcendental heart, because that is what you can take with you. That is you. That is eternal. That is permanent. You can't lose it. And your destiny is to be the heart of the cosmos, consciously, the heart of God. You are that already. It's just that this distractive life has kept you focused elsewhere and deluded into thinking there's something in this transitory world that's going to make your heart sing, that's going to fulfill you, that's going to make you happy. That's going to enlighten you. Nothing can, outside of you, can give you something that you don't already possess within you. But until you have that breather space where everything is taken away in many cases, or you give it all away in many cases, whatever your process is, you make room for something greater to come in and fill you, while you make peace with emptiness and hang out in patience for a while and exercising your faith until it does. I want to tell you something about faith. The description of faith in the Bible is this. I'm going to say it slowly so you get it. Faith is the substance. Hello, it's the matter. It's the substance of the things that you're hoping for. And it's the evidence of things unseen. It's the evidence of the unseen. Because we have to precipitate, and that's an esoteric word, which means to take from the unmanifest and move it into manifestation tangibly and physically. It's called precipitation. You're more probably familiar with the word manifestation or materialization, but it's the same thing. But to precipitate requires a great deal more intensity and intentionality on your part. That's the difference. So faith, which sounds like a wimpy word, unless you say it in Sanskrit. I'm going to say it in Sanskrit. Faith is sahana, steadfast fortitude of certainty that calls forth out of the manifest that which you would have manifest. And it comes right in according to your belief. It rides right in on your belief system. And your belief system is like a megaphone that communicates to the universe how you want your goodies delivered, okay? The universe just reflects back to you the energy that you place into it. That's all it does. So faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Because anyone who walks by faith has ample evidence that the unseen is more real and more tangible than the seen. But everything that changes, changes first within you and then without. So your attitude, your state of consciousness, your state of vibration is absolutely tantamount when it comes to, in importance, when it comes to how your future is going to take shape around you, it's going to come to you through you. And so each of our seminars is really targeted to calling forward your own divine mastery, your own divine knowing about these things, so that you are equipped with the keys of consciousness to enable you to ride and surf these changes rather than having a wipeout. And anyway, I'm right in the middle of it myself, so I'm sharing with you my process, because that way we all grow and learn together, and it's real, because I'm going through it. So, if you will, notice that every single time you try to make someone else's life happier, easier, more pleasant, you are building them up through encouragement or whatever the good action that you're doing, you're making their life better. Notice how that will give you instant feedback in positive feelings. It will increase your self-esteem, your self-respect, your self-confidence, your joy. It's like immediate, instantly, you will feel happier yourself when you do that. And notice, if you will, that whenever you get bogged down with personal concerns, that your light begins to dim down. Concern and lowering your light quotient come together. Why? Because concern is a very heavy energy. It implies doubt in the goodness of God, uncertainty about the divine provision in your life. It's that flickering, wavering that causes us to be unsteady in all of our ways. And it's sad because it dims the light, it dims the luster. You know, you look at people's faces that are heavily burdened with worldly cares, and they have gray faces filled with lines, and everything about the face shows you that they spend most of their time worrying about material things. And, you know, when you lower your light, notice how along with that, your heart, which is like a lotus, begins to droop. So don't have a droopy heart, lotus. Don't have a dimmed light. Get over yourself, because it's self-concern that does that. So notice when your energy contracts, or whenever one's attention becomes filled with self-concern and worry and where will I go, what will I eat, where will I, you know, where will I put my stuff, what will I do, what will people think of me? What if I give it all up, move to Timbuktu? What'll happen? You know, all of that stuff. And, you know, self-concern is involved whenever there's worry about not having enough or of not having your needs met. And this is how the ego views life. That's the ego viewpoint. It always sees in terms of lack and personal limitation, because it depends on its own strengths. And as much as it is vainglorious in itself boasting, it realizes it really can't do doodly squat when it comes down to it. It's very weak. Because life is designed for you to co-partner with the divine, or it doesn't work. You know, life minus God simply doesn't work. Life with God works. And that's the difference. It's a very simple shift. And here I think I have to insert the fact that God, your true self, and the inner master or true teacher or guru are one and the same. There is one divine life. And it isn't apportioned off in differences. The differences are man-made and mind-generated. But the truth is, God is one. All life is one, love is one, mind is one, heart is one, divine purpose is one. And it's simply love. So the egocentric individual is interested in self-preservation at all costs. And therefore, this tendency to contract whenever this whatever they have deemed as a support system in their life, when it's threatened or jeopardized in any way, the immediate tendency is to contract in fear and to become worried about how one will survive, make ends meet the challenges before one, all of that stuff that we're all familiar with. And during that process, the singing heart grows silent. And it grows silent whenever the ego mind enters in. You'll notice whenever you start to think in the lower sense, not planning in a goal-fitting way, but worrying, agitating towards uncertainty, you'll notice how heavy that energy is. It's heavy. It's dense. And that dims the light and dulls the hearing so that you can't hear very clearly your guidance. You can't focus very well and center yourself. And the heart song, you know, is stilled. So it puts you in a real depressed, fearful, unhappy state. Just know that that need not be so. You needn't go there. And if you're aware and can identify as I share these things and these processes with you, hopefully we can transition through these things together and you won't have to get lost in them. Let me get lost in them and find my way out of them, and then together I can help us all progress through these changes and hopefully save many or maybe some of you from going through a great deal of upheaval and angst in the process. So the heart has room for only one to occupy the throne. And it's going to be love or fear, God or ego. And the expression is either divine, which is expansion, or ego, which is contraction. And the ego, being selfish itself, is always in a state of withholding and harboring grievance. So the areas that you withhold, what's that? Where you withhold your energy or your participation or your loving or whatever, or you're saying your material things, that's the ego. And whenever you harbor grievance, make a big case out of something, taking it personally and allowing a bitter root to grow in your heart, beware, because that dims the light of the world that you are. The selfless self, the divine self, gives and forgives. It's in the business of giving, bestowing, blessing, including, embracing. So what you withhold from another, you've withheld from yourself. Why? Because there's only one self, one divine self animating all of these seemingly separate individuals. And that's why Jesus said that whatsoever you do to the least of these, you've done to me. And the least of these in the ancient world meant the lepers, the prostitutes, the tax collectors. In other words, the socially unacceptable outcasts. So who did Jesus hang out with? Those people. Just those very people, which earned him a bad reputation by and large in those days. And those were the ones he spent time with, going against all the social conventions of his times. Why? Because he was giving a message that all life is one. So be alike to everyone. A Course in Miracles puts it this way: I but give to myself, and whatever I give, I receive. In giving, I demonstrate that I have already received. Because giving and receiving are one action. And likewise, whatever I deprive myself of, I will notice that I have sought to deprive another of that very thing. And that's how we deprive ourselves. So it's always the self. You know, you never have to look any further than your own self, your own life, your own mind, your own attitude to see where the correction needs to be made. It's never in the outer, ever. It's never in the outer person, the outer situation, or in the world. It's always within yourself. The world and everything in it is a projection of your own mind. So, one of the biggest keys to abundance, which sounds totally Looney Tunes to the ego, is that to have anything, you must first give it. Whatever it is, you must first give it if you would have more of it. And that communicates to the universe that you have, and to those that have, more is given. To those that lack, even the little they have, they shall lose it. That's the principle behind that enigmatic statement in the Bible, you know, that makes the ego so upset. Well, why should somebody who's rich get richer and someone who's poor get poorer? Because the one who's rich lives in an abundant consciousness, obviously. They keep attracting more and more money. And the one in the poverty consciousness is attracting more and more lack. Why? Because that's the energy they're putting into the cosmos. Whenever you say, I want, I need, you are affirming lack. You're telling the universe, I don't have this, which is a lie because you're divine and you have everything. So the universe looks at you and won't put energy into that because, you know, you're coming from a false state. So it gives you more falsehood, which would be lack and limitation and problems and hardships. But who created that energy matrix? You did. By coming from a position of neediness and lack. Don't you run away from people that hound you? You know, every time you see them, you know they're going to hit you up for a loan, or they're going to tell you some story that they've told you for the past 5 years. It's the same hard luck story. Don't you want to, like, go the other direction? I sure do. Who wants to hang out with that? Well, the universe is like that too. The universe, being divine, gravitates where there's love and joy and singing hearts and the perception of one life and the celebration of that one life. God is life, and that more abundant. So you catch my drift? Don't go around with a begging bowl when you're the King of Kings or the child of the King of Kings. You know, you can take the child's position, or you can take the position of being one with the Father. Either one will work, depending on where you're parked. Problem is, we need to claim our divine inheritance rather than our ego's insufficiency. So, I would say probably what I've shared is highlighting the principle, which I speak of often, of seeding that which you would harvest. The whole cycle of life is about seed and harvest. Everything, if you look at nature, everything is in that process of seed and harvest. And that's, I think, why it feels better sometimes to give a gift than to actually receive one. Because not only do you receive, you receive such a gift of joy when you give a gift, but when you receive one, aside from knowing that you've given joy to that person who gave you the gift, it's not quite as great as when you have given the gift yourself. And I think it's because that part of us that is ever full and ever content and ever free actually recognizes that the act of giving is a divine act. I remember when we were with Sai Baba, he held out his hands and he said, you see these hands? These hands have the power to give you anything you want, but they only give, they never take. So come to me, take from me. What do you want? And sometimes he'd look you right in the eye and ask you what you'd want. Well, try to think of something when God, the God force, the God form in human incarnation looks at you and says, what do you want? You know? I was very fortunate. I was kneeling in a personal interview right up against his knee, looking up into his eyes about a few inches away, looking deep in his eyes. And I told God in this form of Sai Baba, I said, merging, 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 Swami. And that was the prayer of my heart, was the wave wishing to merge in the sea. And he gave me that immediately. It's taken me now several decades to integrate that more and more. But I realized and recognized that that was the cry of my heart, and he immediately answered it. Although the realization and the integration of that in time-space seems sequential. And whatever you truly ask from your heart of hearts, from that singing heart place of your true divine essence, what you ask of God is given instantly. Instantly. You've got to know that through faith. And then you have to grow into that. Your whole nervous system, your cells, everything, your brain, everything, so you don't go wacko. You're going to go Looney Tunes if you come to God from a human consciousness level filled with ego and impurity, and he gives you instant realization. I know I've seen a few people that that happened to. Sometimes they die instantly, and sometimes they live, but they're insane after that. One of my husbands that happened to. Bob answered the cry of his heart, but he became mentally incapable of continuing on in the normal, quote, whatever that is, sense of things. So just saying, you know, be careful what you ask for, because you will get it, and you have to be ready to receive it, or, good luck. It's good luck anyway. Whatever happens to you, you know, the body dies, who cares? The mind goes insane, who cares? You're not the mind, you're not the body, you're not even here. This is just a fiction that you think you're living. So who cares? Give it all up. But that understanding comes and goes. So bottom line, you give whatever you want more of. You give the energy of it, you give the substance of it, you give the attitude of it, and the universe just reflects back to you that. And you know, that's how you communicate to the universe the energy of abundance and generosity, which will just keep refilling you so that you always have more and more to give and share. That's the whole purpose of the universe, is expanding largesse, abundance, awareness, expansion. There's an old saying that you can never outgive God. Some people, they put, you know, a donation or a tithing into the source of their spiritual nourishment, and then God comes back and blesses them in multifold ways from the tithe, for example, that they put. Sai Baba said that sometimes people criticize when in India they pour the clarified butter into the fire or the precious gems. Baba will often manifest the 9 precious gems that take away the negative forces of the planets. He will manifest them into the sacrificial fire, and they will pour all kinds of ghee and butter and yogurt and rice into the sacrificial fire. But Sai Baba said, it's like the Indian form of tithing. Sai Baba said that whatever goes into that sacrificial fire assures the abundance for the whole collective planet. So a cup full of ghee, for example, of clarified butter, could manifest this richness throughout the planet. And that's why sometimes these yajnas, these fire pit ceremonies, seem so bizarre to us in the Western mindset, because we don't understand. In India, they always make an offering to the god, to that god force that they wish to have participate in whatever it is they're doing. They're not worshiping many gods, they're worshiping the potency or the expression of the divine in that particular manifestation, which they personalize because, you know, aside from the certain ones, most of the people were illiterate in ancient times. You know, they're still illiterate in many, many countries. So they learn through symbology, through imagery, through icons, through forms, murtis, divine images. And that should not be considered idolatry. That should be considered as working tools of consciousness to keep you focalized into what it is that you're trying to call forward and manifest. So just saying that yajna, giving sacrifice, offering to God, whatever you offer to God, according to Sai Baba, not only is purified and rendered pure, but it also blesses the whole collective. For example, those of you who are addicted to smoking, if you would take your cigarette, and instead of looking at it as another nail in your coffin or whatever, if you would look at it as offering it to God, as tobacco to the Native Americans, as one of the five sacred herbs, and you would smoke it like the Native Americans do, offering the smoke, your prayer on the smoke, and blessing the cigarette, then your desire for the cigarette would gradually be diminished until eventually you'd have no desire to smoke at all. Sometimes people are even delivered from that habit. And meanwhile, that was done just prior to when they had the great smoke out here in California. And they put into law that you could no longer smoke in, like, for example, business establishments or hotel lobbies or restaurants. And that could have been because a lot of people were doing that, were taking a different approach to what they're doing. Same thing if you have any addictive pattern, offer it to God. Before you take that drink, offer the drink to God. In Tibet, they will always take a little bit of the beverage and they will throw it to the five directions, or four directions, I guess, to bless all the spirits and the gods. And thus they have rendered that action sacred. So whatever you do, do it for God. Offer it to God. Everything you do, before you do it, offer it to God. Then it's transformed from an addiction to a yajna, a holy sacrifice, a holy ritual, which will ultimately deliver you from bondage. Whatever you offer to God is purified. Bottom line, okay? That's why it's important to offer your life, your day, your night, your dreams, everything to God. So when we talk about the singing heart, we're talking about that genuine, generous, overflowing with abundance heart. And the importance of noticing where you tend to close down and restrict and contract or hoard for yourself. And when you notice that, don't judge it or make yourself wrong. Just notice the energies at play in your life. Know that awareness is life, for awareness is God. And you could say that God is total life awareness. So that's where we're moving with all of this, is to become totally aware of life within and without. So contraction and restriction and closing down to the flow of life energy is the very cause of every manifestation of disease and ultimately death. That's the ultimate closing down, isn't it? So become like the Sherlock Holmes of your life and examine the evidence. Are you allowing life energy and love and happiness to flow freely through you? Where is it constricted? Where is it blocked? Breathe through it. Breathe through it. Embrace it. Don't fight it. Don't resist it. Just love it. Love it whole. Love it free. And, you know, what if you do, if in spite of your best efforts, you still find yourself contracting in fear and closing down in, you know, survival, preservation mode? And I say that's where you practice loving self-compassion. And you accept what is as it is, and you just breathe into it without judging it, without making yourself wrong, and allow it to heal in the presence of your acceptance. When you don't fight it, you don't resist it, you breathe into it, and you recognize it as simply life, just a part of life that's coming home to God through you, you breathe it home on your breath. That's all you have to do. You breathe into it. You relax. It's like giving birth. You relax. You breathe into your contraction. You breathe into it. You let that baby come just out. Some of you women know exactly what that feels like. But men too, you know, you just relax and you breathe into your fears. You breathe into your emotions. You breathe into your pain. Or whatever, you know, is manifesting. And as you practice, not resisting, but letting, you know, just breathing with it and letting it be, you will notice, if you stay with it, it starts to release its grip on you. I've done this when I've been in excruciating pain, where the only respite I had was to keep my focus at my third eye and practice what I'm telling you here. Everything I'm telling you here, I practice all the time. And it, you know, it works. It works. So keep breathing with your feelings and allowing the disturbance or whatever it is to dissolve. It will dissolve as you breathe. It will dissipate. And you will feel a freeing up inside yourself as it lets go. Do that if you have something that's painful that you've taken personally and you're starting to build a cause of againstness and grievance. Just, you know, keep releasing and breathing and releasing and breathing. Don't think about the thing that upsets you. Just breathe and release the feeling. Stay with the feeling and let it just go through you. And ask the Lord to help you dissolve any againstness or any angst that you might have. And in this way, you'll be able to surf the waves of emotions and glide like an eagle upon the currents of thought. Get that imagery. Surf the waves of emotions and glide like an eagle on the currents of thought. And your breath will birth you into a higher state of being, awareness, and bliss. And your heart will sound forth its song of joy. And the key is relaxation, accepting what is, breathing with it, allowing it to pass on through on its way to God, home, love. Escort everything home to love. Let it be healed in love. Let it be dissolved in the light of truth. Let everything return home through you to the beloved. And then we'll be able to move through these turbulent times of rapid change with such ease, with such conscious presence, that it will become for itself a yoga. It will yoke us with the divine. We will walk in union with God. We'll be in God consciousness as we move through every day. So we stay here and now, focused in the breath, relaxed. Here and now, you know, what time is it? Now. Where are you? Here. What's happening? Divine life and awareness. So people, relationships, objects, possessions, states of consciousness, cycles, all of these things change and will ultimately leave your life when their purpose has been fulfilled. So don't cling. Allow everything to go the way that it must, the way of its destiny, the way of its divine appointment. Don't cling. You cannot lose what is not marked for you, nor can you retain what isn't. Relax, release, breathe, trust, have faith. And what's the precipitation of the things that you hope for? And witness the evidence of the reality of the unseen world. That is what gives you that sustenance, that bolstering, that inner confidence and scaffolding of strength. And you will feel so grounded and yet transcendental at the same time. You will be landed in your divinity. You will land in your divinity. And you will walk the earth, not under the aegis of the pushing of the collective illusion, but walking in the light of divine revelation and truth. And the things that you need will come to you through grace without your even needing to think about them. That is the promise Jesus gave in the Bible, that before you even think of it, it will come to you if your mind be single and your whole body filled with light. You are the light of the world. You are the light of the universe. You are the light of the cosmos. You are light itself. And the song in your heart is the Bhagavad Gita. It is God singing to his beloved, which is you and me and everyone. So I hope this has been helpful to you. Let's take a deep breath and we will chant Anayu, which is a beautiful mantra that says, you and I are one. Hu is an ancient Sanskrit word, an Hebrew word, and Sufi word that simply means God. Hu, heavenly, universal. So let's take a deep breath. All the beings and all the worlds be happy. May all the beings and all the worlds have peace. Baruch Hashem Adonai.